on your computer, on your Wi-Fi radio, on your iPhone. Commercial-free original talk. Only on LA Talk Radio, your favorite talk station.
You're listening to Troubled Teen Help with Dory Francis, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Hi, and good afternoon, everyone. This is Dory Francis, and you are listening to Troubled Teen Help. This show is here to help you understand that the moment you realize that life can and does change in an instant, change in an instant is a profound moment in the journey of your life or perhaps the life of your child. As your weekly host, I am here to provide multiple resources for families and professionals who are assisting children, teens, and young adults, and who may be facing a critical time in their life. Today, I am very grateful to have with us Dr. Andrew Sapp, PhD, who is the founder and CEO of Cherry Gulch, which is a high-quality ranch-style therapeutic boarding school for 10 to 14-year-old boys. Dr. Sapp is a licensed clinical psychologist and a well-rounded clinician who has worked as a therapist at a therapeutic wilderness program for 11 to 13-year-old students, a locked inpatient psychiatric hospital where he was the lead clinician on the adolescent unit, and also worked on the pediatric unit as well as two community clinics, an elementary school, and an inner city group home for foster boys. Also, Dr. Sapp was a naval lieutenant and a therapist at a military hospital. He started his career as a coach, camp counselor, and mentor, and later worked at a youth correctional facility with youth as young as 12 years old. It was here that he developed his passion for working with youth, and particularly for early intervention and prevention. I know Dr. Sapp has a very busy schedule there at the ranch, and so I really appreciate his time in being here today for our listeners. Good afternoon, Dr. Sapp.
Hi, Dory. Thank you so much for giving me the privilege of being on your show and allowing me to talk about a subject that I'm really passionate about, middle school boys and the need to give them all the help that we can.
Absolutely, and that's exactly what we're going to talk about today is the mind, moods, motivation, and maturity of the middle school male. And I'd like to start off with actually asking you, Dr. Sapp, you know, why do you focus on the middle school boys?
Well, for one, it's an area of expertise for me, and so I just have really felt that there's a need to help these boys. But for two, I mean, I feel that helping boys in general will help girls, will help women, will help wives and mothers, and will help our society in general. As you have boys that are more emotionally mature and we break some of these negative cycles that these boys get caught in, it's better for everybody. And I'm just really passionate about early intervention and prevention and getting started with this process before they get too far down the wrong road and they're stealing cars and snorting cocaine and things like that. And really trying to open these boys up and get them to blossom and start to flourish before these kind of negative patterns start to emerge and they start to shut down and not be able to appropriately express their thoughts and feelings and communicate what's really going on for them, which then leads on to a whole host of other problems. Yep. Also, I'm sorry, go ahead, Dory.
No, go ahead.
Also, with boys, it's with this middle school years, it's really formative and important, and it's the period of greatest change other than any other time in the lifespan other than infancy. So it's a great time to try to intervene and to help get these boys on the right path. And there's tens of thousands of boys in juvenile and adult prisons, thousands in gangs, and many others who are lost and confused as they try to be real boys and grow into real men. And although, you know, some people will say, well, it's a man's world out there and there's a glass ceiling, although, you know, that may very well be true. It's certainly not a boy's world. And as we go through the rest of this interview, we'll talk about some of the challenges that boys face in their life.
Absolutely. And, you know, again, for our listeners, our guest today is Dr. Andrew Sapp, PhD, who is the founder and CEO of Cherry Gulch, which is located in Idaho and is a high-quality ranch-style therapeutic boarding school for 10 to 14-year-old boys. For those who have a question today for Dr. Sapp, you may call into the show at 323-203-0815. You know, let's begin, Dr. Sapp, with where do the troubles start for a middle school boy?
I think the troubles really start with the kind of the culture of cruelty, like that Dr. Kinlan and Dr. Thompson talked about in Raising Cain, and of how these boys start to feel like, you know, they can't be vulnerable, they can't express their thoughts and feelings, because if they do, they're going to be considered a sissy or a wuss, or other kids might make fun of them, and they want to, you know, look tough, and they can handle it and be stoics. They stuff things inside, and that's a problem that lots of men face as well, of not being able to express themselves, and really trying to help these boys realize that a sign of strength, a true sign of strength, is to be able to express yourself and to talk about things in a mature way, and to communicate, and to have a well-rounded kind of emotional expression, and to be able to be true and honest about your feelings. And so I think that that's one point where they start to kind of take a turn for the worse, is putting on this mask of masculinity and not expressing themselves.
Sure. I grew up with three younger brothers, and that was exactly the atmosphere that, you know, that they were brought up in from, you know, our father. And I can see very much where that, you know, plays a part in their life today as they're raising their children. You know, what type of academic problems do boys tend to have?
I'm glad you asked that, because academics is also an area where I think that some of these problems begin. You get these boys where they feel it's better to be bad than dumb, so to speak. You know, they're not really dumb, but they're not succeeding in school. They're not being successful there, and so they start being the class clown or acting out, because at least they feel they control that. That, you know, if I wanted to do better, I could do better, but I'm acting out and getting in trouble because that's what I want to do, rather than focus on school. Also, I think that within some schools, not all, but there's kind of the stigma of doing well in school is not okay. I know in my high school, I didn't do well until I started thinking, well, I want to get a scholarship and I want to wrestle at Oregon State University. And so that was my motivation to start doing better in school rather than anything else, because otherwise I didn't want to be in the National Honor Society, because I thought, well, that's not cool. And so there's that culture within, for boys as well, of some schools at least not wanting to do well. But so as these boys start to have difficulties, then their academic troubles get worse and worse, and that can lead to more emotional problems, lower self-esteem, lack of confidence, more acting out behaviors. And eventually, if a boy is struggling in school and he doesn't feel like academics is a way that he can kind of get ahead in life or to be successful, then he's going to start looking for something other than, say, that college track, and he'll look for a group of people that respect him for what he feels he's good at. Maybe that's, you know, his activity, or being strong and courageous, or his aggressiveness, or whatever it may be. And that's a group that maybe, say, a gang might want to recruit and have this boy do their dirty work. And as he's doing that, then he's getting some positive strokes from the gang of, hey, this is great job, you know, you took the guns from here to there or whatever, and that was good. But this boy's not doing well in school and struggling in that area. So the boys that are having academic difficulties are much more likely to suffer from some of these other emotional and behavioral problems and juvenile delinquency and other things. So boys really feel that academically the deck is stacked against them. And even from a standpoint of, say, like a diagnosis of mental retardation, boys suffer that at a rate of nearly one-third higher than that of girls. Mm. And roughly 50% more boys are diagnosed with speech impairments than girls. Learning disabled boys outnumber girls 2-1, and boys have 3 times more difficulty with reading than girls. Nationally, boys earn 70% of the D's and F's in school, and the percentage of boys that go to college has dropped dramatically in the last 20 years.
Wow.
So you can see there's a lot of challenges that they're having. And boys are different than girls, and that's why, I'll certainly talk about girls in this talk as well, but that's why I wanted to separate those out, is there's a lot of differences between not only boys and girls, but also between the different age groups of boys and different age groups of girls within their same gender. Boys prefer
Go ahead.
Boys prefer to learn about engaging in action-oriented tasks, for instance, objects moving through space or experiential types of activities. And although girls are typically equal to boys in math and science, boys generally lag behind in reading and writing, partly because of the types of things they enjoy or are interested in. If you're a boy and you write about some battle or some death or some, violent action, you're very likely going to end up in my office talking to a psychologist or a counselor. So what does that boy learn to do? He learns to write for his teacher. He learns to start writing about fluffy clouds and rainbows and unicorns. And I got an A+, or maybe it was an A-, but I got an A anyways on a story called Daffodil Town, where I wrote about daffodils and this whole village that lived inside these daffodils. And I'm a sensitive guy, but I don't care too much about daffodils. Other things I'd rather write about. And so I think that we start to crush these boys in their interests, and they get in trouble for these things that they're interested in, and they start to write less, they read less, and they start to slip further and further behind.
Well, I've noticed that even in younger boys, too. When younger boys are playing, they make lots of noise and sounds, and they're active, and they move around the room, and girls, tend to be, at least most times, a little bit more quiet. And I've seen parents time and time again, tell the boys, don't be loud, don't be quiet, don't do that, don't make noise, and that really is their way of expressing themselves.
Absolutely. Yeah, in fact, it's interesting you say that, because 80% of the stimulant medication goes to boys, and you have to wonder, is this because they're ADHD or is this because they're boys?
Right.
3 times more boys than girls have been diagnosed with ADHD. And one of the books I was reading, and I'm forgetting which one now, but it was talking about how this truck driver had a son, and he was having all these issues, so he took him in, and he was diagnosed with attention deficit disorder. And so the truck driver thought, well, geez, he's attention deficit, I better pay some more attention to him. So he stopped going on these long-haul trucking routes and started doing kind of a more local route and spending more time with his son, and the ADHD went away. Sometimes ADHD is definitely a real thing, and I'm not trying to suggest in any way that it's not or that medication can't be helpful for it. However, I think that it's really important to realize that sometimes boys just have a lot of energy. They need to get out there. They need to be more hands-on. They're more physical than girls. And so that, I think, makes up some of what we think is ADHD, is just this natural inclination for activity. And what success helps a boy be successful, or what helps a person be successful in school, sitting down, listening, and focusing, that's what really helps you be successful in a traditional school. And boys just aren't naturally very good at that. They can't do these things long. So we need to give them more recess, not less. We need
Yes.
to have classrooms with high ceilings and plenty of space. And boys need more role models as well. Fewer than 1 in 9 elementary school teachers are men, and 80% of the boys in Harlem want to be NBA stars, whereas 80% of the girls in Harlem want to be doctors or lawyers. And so the boys are just kind of looking towards these sports idols, and some of them are good influences, but others aren't. But either way, we want to try to find kind of why it's important to get an education, whether that's for a builder or an astronaut or a rocket scientist or a teacher, or you're starting a business or you're doing something with computers. And everything you do, really, education is important, whether it's a formal degree on the wall or if it's just knowledge that you've learned. And so we at Cherry Gulch, we try to get boys involved in things like First Lego Robotics League and Team America Rocketry Challenge, and they've just built a shed as part of their math class. They've been state champions in chess in 2008 and 2009. So trying to get them active, hands-on things that they see, oh, this is why I need to get an education, going to observatories and banding migratory birds with fish and wildlife biologists and things like, wow, okay, now I see how education relates to me and why I need it.
You know, and one of the things that you touched on just a little bit in the beginning of the show, and I have an interest in, and I've had lots of parents ask me about, is that there are still some changes occurring in the brain, you know, for these young boys. And I was hoping you could talk a little bit more about that situation.
Oh, absolutely. I'd like to talk a little bit more about this academic before I get into that.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
You're the guest.
All right. Well, I just feel that the academic piece is really important, even at a therapeutic school. And if you look at the boys in academics, you'll see that twice as many, or their boys are twice as likely to repeat a grade by age 12. I did. I was held back. I'm doing fine now, but it certainly, you know, boys have a disadvantage in a traditional school. They're twice as likely to be suspended, three times more likely to be expelled, and they comprise the majority of dropouts. And even when you get older, males are more likely to withdraw from college without completing their degree. For every 100 women in America who earn a bachelor's degree, only 73 men complete the same degree. And women who earn a master's degree outnumber men by more than 30%. And then if you look at the growing trends for kind of their falling behind in reading and writing, by the fourth grade, for instance, in reading, boys are 5 points behind girls. By the 12th grade, they're 12 points behind girls. And with writing, it's the same. By fourth grade, they're 17 points behind girls. And by 12th grade, they're 24 points behind girls. And interestingly enough, that's similar across the board in other countries, too. In Canada, France, Germany, Japan, and the United States, they all have the girls there all outperform the boys between 29 and 35 points. And in response to this alarming downward trend in boys' academic performance, many countries have initiated publicly funded efforts to boost achievement. However, the U.S. hasn't.
So Is that because of the way that they're taught in the public school system, that they're not, that they, as a boy specifically, is not getting enough of what they need in order to accomplish the goals that, you know, are set out for them?
Yeah, I think that, you know, for one, just these large class sizes, they don't get the same amount of help that they need. And then also boys are really sensitive to being shamed and humiliated and made it fun of. And so I think sometimes they're afraid to seek the help that they need until they're kind of embarrassed that they need it. And also just they're seeing school really as a place for girls. The girls are doing better. Most of the teachers are female. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just that they're seeing this as, that's not a boy thing, and so I don't want to do this. They start to relate to it. I think sometimes even like playing with dolls, it's, oh, you know, she's a goody two-shoes, but I'm too cool to do that, or I don't want to do that. So it's sometimes they can be rejected if they do really well in school. They're kind of a nerd. Which I've certainly fought against, although I think I'm finally embracing my inner nerdness. And they, I think that they also, they feel like the school, their schoolwork is meaningless and the classes are dull and the school lessons aren't something that's going to be important to them later in life.
Right, right. That's what I hear from a lot of the boys that I work with, is that they don't see where this is going to benefit them, you know, in whatever their choice is, you know, after school, of what they're doing. You know, and you touched on the aspect, too, of play time and outdoor time and running around time. You know, it's being taken away more and more instead of increased. And I do see that the boys are the ones who are bouncing off the walls more when that happens. And that's very unfortunate.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, there's within kind of a public school setting, at least, there's boys are more likely to report being the victim of a crime while at school, and this includes bullying, caring, or being threatened or injured by a weapon in school, being in a physical fight on school property, using alcohol while in school, using or distributing an illegal drug on school property. So that makes it kind of a dangerous place as well, and they kind of need to puff themselves up and really in some real ways to try to defend themselves so they don't have to be beat up, basically.
Mm.
But, yeah, and then I think that as far as, well, I guess I should...
Well, then the raging hormones start coming in at the same time that all this is going on.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and yeah, a lot of people talk about those raging hormones and things, and they certainly, I mean, those are a big deal. You look at testosterone concentrations, they can increase as much as 20 times their initial concentrations between the ages of 10 and 17. And by around age 14, a boy's testosterone level has increased by almost 800%.
Wow.
His body will process between 5 and 7 surges of testosterone a day. And, you know, there's some mixed reports on testosterone, but it certainly has been linked to aggression and physical risk-taking, and it also appears to affect the teen's ability to read nonverbal signals accurately. And that, you know, we see a lot of middle school boys that have some social difficulties and things, and so it's, you know, not really a surprise with the fact that all these hormones are going on. But back to the brain development you asked me about, really, we found that even though there's a ton of these hormonal changes, the brain development actually has an even larger role to play in kind of the moods and the changes that are going on. And there are dramatic changes occurring from the age of 11 to 14. And we used to think that the brain was pretty much done developing by, you know, 5 or so. But now we've found that it's not at all. There's a lot that's still going on. In fact, if you look at the corpus callosum, it continues to increase in size through the third decade of life, and the colossus isthmus, which is a little isolated piece of the corpus callosum, it grows by 80% between the age of 7 and 11, and this extreme growth in parts of the brain continues to about age 15. And the fact that the prefrontal cortex is not completed until... Well, it's not complete at age 12 and doesn't really mature until about the age of 25. And the prefrontal cortex is responsible for skills such as impulse control, good judgment, weighing alternatives, decision making. So clearly, sometimes our expectations, and it's important to have high expectations, but sometimes they're too high for kind of where this boy is developmentally. And then the pruning occurs, and this largely occurs after age 7 but before age 16. So you can see that during this time period, there's a ton of different changes going on. Rakic and colleagues found that as many as 30,000 synapses may be lost per second in the neocortical brain during adolescence. So early adolescence is associated with a major transformation of cognitive thought leading to abstract reasoning. So that's about all I wanted to give you right now on the brain and on the hormones. But I did.
So parents who have young adults then who aren't 25 yet, there's still hope.
There's still hope. And you know, for and you're not as old as you think you are either, I guess is a good way of putting it. I always try to do this delicately, but if you're not over 40, you're about 42, some of the myelinization process is still going on until like your early 40s. And so, yeah, we're still in tip-top shape.
Wow. I mean, that is just some tremendous information for people to have. And for people who aren't able to take all this in and write all this down, the show will be archived so you can go back and listen to it again. And I know that Dr. Sepp has lots of information on all of these things he's talking about. You know, so along with the brain development and then the hormones, you know, puberty in itself really is a milestone, I think, for both boys and girls. And that's an important part of them developing. But it sounds like there's so much going on all at the same time. How is a parent, you know, able to relate to all these, you know, magnificent changes that they can't see?
Well, I think that you a really important piece there is to respect the fact that there are these changes and that these boys have this need to feel more mature, that they are maturing, that they want to take on new challenges, they want to find some things that they're successful at and that they have competencies in. A lot of the complaints of boys is, "Oh, I'm treated like a baby."
Mm-hmm.
Because the boys are developing quicker than their parents can imagine. And so although we need to have that structure and that support for them, we want to kind of help encourage them in a positive way that, yeah, that was really mature of you, or, man, you're getting more mature every day, things like that, to help the boys feel like, okay, we're aware of these and we're seeing these changes. And also just be sensitive to the fact that boys are sensitive at this age, and that they need your support. And even though they're going to push you away, and then at other times they're going to pull you back, and you're going to be confused because you won't know whether, okay, is he a boy or is he a man? Am I supposed to help him or not? And you know, there's this whole push pull, and that can drive parents crazy. But that's all normal. You know, that's pieces that's just going to happen, and that. The boys are trying to find, to individuate, to kind of figure out who they are, to find their own identity, and so they're pushing away a little bit. Also, especially with moms, moms are kind of the last evidence that they were a little baby and that they needed all this help and they needed their bottoms powdered and things, and so they kind of push away from their moms because, look, I'm growing into a man. I can do this on my own. I don't need my mom to do it. So a lot of times, even as boys tease each other, you'll hear, you know, well, you're a mama. You know, it's like they're talking about their moms and things because they're kind of sensitive about that. And so a good way for a mom to stay connected to boys is even to just kind of be with a boy as they're doing these active things, to kind of support them that way, to go engage in some of the activities that the boy likes to do, to shoot hoops with them, and to not pepper them with questions, but to kind of support them and encourage them, and to make sure that those boys feel that you have full belief that they're going to turn out to be fine young men, that they're going to be great when they grow up, and that you love them unconditionally.
You know, one of the struggles that I see parents having, too, is that it does appear that kids are maturing physically much quicker than they used to. So when you're looking at a 14-year-old boy who's, you know, close to 6 feet tall and has that deep voice already, and you're trying to remember that he's still a child, it's very confusing, the messages that are given back and forth.
It's very confusing, and you see that both for the kind of the smaller boys that are later to develop, and also for the larger boys that maybe are developing more quickly. If you see, you know, a 6 foot tall 13-year-old that you're looking up to, you expect more. You kind of think, well, you know, you better get out there and help with this or do that because, you know, my goodness, you're 180 pounds and 6 feet tall. You're bigger than I am, but yet their brains haven't got right. Caught up yet. The hormones haven't settled. They're not mature yet. They look like it, but they're still boys. They're not men yet. And so although we want to kind of start treating them with more maturity, we want to remember that these are still boys, and they're not, even the little ones, you know, they're not just little men, they're boys. And then if you're looking at puberty, yeah, there's vast changes for a boy in the in kind of size differences and all sorts of things, and that is the seminal before and after moment in a boy's life, and it's certainly the kind of the most important stage of this middle school time period. And like I said before, after infancy, it's the period of the most rapid growth in the human life cycle, and early changes of puberty are the central story of boys 11 to 13. Puberty is normally underway in all boys by 14. Some start even earlier, 10, you know, 9, 10, but most start at 11 or 12 or 13. And the growth associated with puberty has numerous effects. So if you talked about, like, say, an eighth grader who's one looks like he's 11 and under 5 feet tall, and the other one's over 6 feet tall, this can really affect a boy's self-esteem and kind of self-consciousness. So what we find is that the earlier developing boys tend to enjoy some advantages and confidence, and late developing boys may suffer from problems with self-esteem. And that's kind of interesting, because that's exactly the opposite of what we tend to find for girls. But so during this period of puberty, there's a rapid increase in height and weight, increased musculature, and early development of the development of the secondary sexual characteristics. And by the end of the 13th year, the vocal cords have begun to thicken and his voice has started to change. Unfortunately for all of our listeners, my voice never really changed. And it may have been from a tragic pole vaulting accident, but I won't get into that. So bear with me.
Oh, we'll have to talk about that on the next show.
Yeah, maybe so. And so also, as these boys are going through puberty, they have rising levels of androgens, and this has begun to change the composition of their perspiration, and they start to smell like an adult. You know, most middle school boys.
That's why the boys' rooms
kind of
always
funky,
smell.
Right? Yeah. And so that's why you've got to remind them, hey, you know, good hygiene, use your deodorant and things. And once the boy starts to have an interest in girls, then we don't have to remind them so much. Then they start to, you know, they're in the front of the mirror, they're preening, they're, you know, gel and all that stuff. And that's kind of ironclad evidence that they've started, you know, they've hit puberty and they've started being interested in girls. But the media has really done a lot to boys, too, and going through all this, these changes and unsure about their bodies and things. But by the time a boy reaches puberty, he's absorbed 80,000 sexual images in the media. And you know, certainly even without that, you can expect a boy to masturbate often and to be moody and aggressive and to require a great deal of sleep and to want to have sex as soon as he gets up the emotional guts to propose it to his partner, and to have a massive sexual fantasy life. And boys will start pulling further away from their parents, wanting to keep private. And this privacy is a sign that a boy is becoming sexually interested. And if you know, if you measure a man's sexual life by ejaculations per week, he peaks at about 15. So these boys are just exploring. They have all these surges of testosterone. Clearly, he's not peaking sexually at 15, but that's when he's having the most surges of testosterone. So it's a lot that's going on for a boy that's really confusing for boys. It's confusing for parents, too. And then there's the mood changes that are associated. So the physical changes make a boy very insecure and self-conscious, and the highest increase in self-consciousness is for boys between 10 and 13. 12 to 14-year-olds have lower self-esteem than both older and younger students, and they show greater extremes in moods than adults.
So there's a lot of behavioral and emotional changes then all going on at the same time. So it's no wonder that, you know, there's so much confusion, not only with the boys themselves, but between the boys and their parents.
Absolutely, yeah. And, you know, kind of going back to even before puberty, right from the beginning, it's not easy for these boys either. You look at male infants and they suffer a 25% higher mortality rate than girls. Males are more likely to suffer from birth defects. Parents talk to, cuddle, and breastfeed their boys less than girls. Mm. And boys are twice as likely to be diagnosed with autism, six times as likely to be diagnosed with hyperkinesis, which is essentially ADHD, mm-hmm. make up the majority of the schizophrenics, and emotionally disturbed boys outnumber girls 4-1. And boys are twice as likely as girls to be victims of physical abuse. They're also twice as likely to be injured to die from physical abuse at the hands of parents or caregivers. Mm. And this is a kind of one that people usually gasp at, but as many as 1 in 4 boys have been sexually molested by the age of 16. Some studies show 1 in 6, 1 in 8, but it's a lot. It's a lot more than we think it is.
It is a lot more than we think it is, and I'm really glad that you brought that up, because it does seem, not to take away from the focus of a gender, but it does seem to focus on the gender of that happening with girls. And I know in my practice that it happens with a lot of boys, and it's just not brought to the forefront as often.
Yeah, there's all this shame and guilt, and they're used to kind of stuffing their feelings inside, which then leads to these anger outbursts and things. So they're not telling anybody what happened to them a lot of times. But the worst wounding of a boy, with the worst consequences, later drug abuse and violent or criminal behavior, came from a combination of sexual abuse and domestic violence. It's really, really bad for boys to be exposed to domestic violence and seeing their fathers beat on their moms and things like that. It just has long-lasting negative consequences.
And so what's made you so passionate about the early intervention and prevention in working with these boys?
Well, it's really,
I mean, why not just let them grow up and grow out of it, right?
Well, because you know, like Anna Freud talked about that it's abnormal to have a normal childhood, a normal adolescence, and we've found that that's not true over the last 20 years or so. That these most adolescents, there's typical adolescent stuff that really they grow up, they're just fine. They're not getting all this trouble. So if you have a boy, especially a younger boy, that's starting to get into a lot of trouble, it's not likely to go away. It's likely to get worse and worse. And if you even look at like the extreme behavior of suicide, in the last 20 years, the greatest increase in suicide rates have been for boys between the age of 10 to 14. So there's not only are there kids dying, but there's kids throwing away their future. And I guess I'm passionate because I want to try to help them get help before they get too far down the wrong road. And knowing that this is kind of our last best chance. I think it was Laura Sessions Stepp that talked about the last best chance, and that these boys, as they're getting older, they're going to be less malleable and more set in these negative patterns. So this is a great opportunity to get them on the right track before they end up in jail or prison or dead.
Mm. You know, there's been a lot of debate also, Dr. Sapp, about whether gender differences are real or just the result of socialization. And I'd like you to share with our listeners your view on that.
There's definitely real. That case has really been closed. There's been some good research on that. So it's not just a matter that, they gave the boys blue things and trucks instead of dolls. A boy is going to want to sword fight with a stick. He's going to want to make a pistol out of his peanut butter and jelly sandwich. There really are differences in males and females and boys and girls, and that's not a bad thing. That's just the way it is. So if we know that and we work with boys, it's not a matter of not letting boys be boys. It's a matter of helping boys grow in a structured, supportive environment where they're getting lots of good role models, both male and female, and they're free to express their feelings, and they've got that love and nurturance that they need, and that they're held accountable for when they're going off the wrong path, that there's someone there to kind of help bring them back onto the right path.
Mm-hmm. You know, I've been to Cherry Gulch. I have visited and seen your program, which is just absolutely one of the greatest programs I've seen for these young boys. And the results, you know, have been amazing in my experience. But what tips do you have for others that might be working with boys?
I think that a great tip is just to kind of do things that are active, that are experiential, instead of, for example, any clinicians that are out there, if you can even get them out on a walk or shoot hoops while you're doing therapy, you know, those experiential things are going to draw that boy in, and he's going to start to open up through those. Like, we use equine-assisted psychotherapy and therapeutic games and initiatives, and sometimes there's amazing things that come out of that. Other times it's just kind of an icebreaker so that we get the boys talking. They're starting to open up, be a little bit more vulnerable about what's going on in a less direct way. And even like, for instance, with the academics, we see that, like, for instance, dads that are on the PTA, they typically have sons that have higher academic scores and things, because they're see, this is important to my dad or my mom or my family. And then spending time with the family, eating dinner together, that's shown to decrease the amount of substance abuse and things like that. And then just helping the boy find his competencies, something that he's good at, something that he can be successful at, something other boys will admire and look up to him for, and to help the boy feel like, you know, you're there for him, you're supporting him, and you think he's a great guy and has a ton of potential.
You know, we've I can't believe how quickly time goes. I'm just going to absolutely have to have you back again. We've got about 10 minutes left, and I really want to make sure that we have some time for you to share with our listeners more about, you know, Cherry Gulch and what you provide there, and you know, the kinds of boys you're working with, and how families can get in touch with you, because you really do have a lot to offer there at Cherry Gulch.
Yeah, we do, and I had about twice as much to talk about, and I probably talked too fast, but
we're going to have you back, absolutely.
But as far as getting in touch with me, you can look up our website, and there's a lot of information about our school on our website at cherrygulch.org, cherry like the fruit and gulch like a small valley .org, and you can contact me at info@cherrygulch.org, info@cherrygulch.org, and our office number is 208-365-3437, and my extension is 502. Again, that's 208-365-3437, extension 502. But yeah, in such a short amount of time left, I just want to say what amazing boys these are that we have. I think that people get the wrong idea when they're thinking of a residential treatment center or a therapeutic school. These boys have a ton of potential and are really wonderful boys, and it's been so heartwarming to hear the success stories of these boys as they graduate and they go on and they're the freshman of the year at their high school, or you know, won some award, or had a boy recently who literally saved another boy's life at school. Wow. And then for our parents too, you know, these are parents that love their sons and love their children and want the absolute best for them. And that's why they choose Cherry Gulch, is they feel that this is a place that is the best in the world, or at least one of them, for their son's particular needs. And we just try to develop the program around all the research that's out there and really have this very intricate and detailed approach that we take, but yet in the end, it's really pretty simple. We're trying to help these boys feel good about themselves, to learn better coping skills and anger management strategies, improve their social skills, try to ignite that kind of spark of wanting to learn and to be successful in school. And as they're successful, they feel better about themselves, and we try to keep the parents involved and teach the parents what's working good for their son at our school, and so they can continue that back at home.
You know, I do have an email that just came in from a parent, Dr. Sapp, who says that I heard briefly you mentioned that Cherry Gulch is in Idaho, and I was hoping that you could tell me a little bit more about where you're located and how your program is set up. Is this a ranch-style program?
It is a ranch-style program, and we're about 35 miles from Boise, but we work with students from all over. We've had boys from the Middle East and from Canada and from the East Coast and lots from California, so there's boys from all over the place here, and the location is great because it just is wide open spaces. We can go snowboarding and whitewater rafting and horseback riding and fishing and camping, and yet the city is close enough to go to the museums and science centers and observatories and things like that.
Yeah, it is. I have to say, it was just breathtaking, you know, standing there at the front of the school and looking at, I don't remember how many acres you have, but it is just absolutely gorgeous. And maybe you could talk a little bit more, too, about the ages of the boys you work with and kind of the profile of the boys you work with. You know, I think, as you said, this is a hard decision for a parent, but this is not a lockdown facility. This is not a hardcore facility. This is really a place where these boys get a very well-rounded social environment and academic environment and therapeutic environment. And if you could just give people a little bit more information about, again, the ages of the boys and you know, the typical types of boys that you have there at Cherry Gulch.
Our boys are typically between 10 and 14, and even the 14-year-olds, you know, if they're more mature and better suited for a high school population, then we want them to go to a different school. We're kind of a softer program, so to speak, where we're a respect-based program, we're relationship-based. That's the number one thing that we're doing, is building relationships. So with our boys, almost all of them in the past have been diagnosed with ADHD, or they might have some sort of learning difference or social skills difficulty or conflict with parents, anger management issues, depression, anxiety, you know, oppositional defiance, things like that. Some of our boys, they've lost parents, or they were adopted from managed overseas. You know, there's lots of different things in their life that have been challenging. And these boys, you know, they have special needs, so to speak. They're great boys, and they have a great future out there. But we need to help them in a different way to kind of get back on the right path and on their feet. And so if you come to our school, you'd be amazed at what bright, shining faces you see, how polite they are, the really nice boys.
They're
wonderful, and I just want to make that clear to people that don't realize that. I think sometimes they picture a school like this being kind of a juvenile hall with all these kids that are really violent and criminally minded. Our boys are wonderful. They're caring, loving boys, but they have challenges that we're trying to help them with so that they can grow up to be, you know, positive contributing members of their family and society and great, great young men.
And I know Bernie Zimmerman was supposed to be with us today, and unfortunately he's one of those who has fallen by the wayside with this terrible flu that's going around. So our wishes to him as he recovers and gets better. I know that you have a lot of wonderful staff out there at Cherry Gulch. I was able to meet quite a few people when I was out there, and just in maybe the last minute here, if you want to share a little bit about some of the other staff that are out there at Cherry Gulch.
Oh, yeah, I'd love to, because I'm the founder of Cherry Gulch, but it's so much better than I could have possibly made it, and they've all put their fingerprints on what we're doing and about the school and about these families and boys as I am. And we currently have 28 boys, at least we will as of tomorrow, and we have about 45 full-time people here. So there's a huge team. We've got 6 licensed clinicians on staff, 2 are PhDs, and the others are licensed master's level clinicians, 4 certified teachers, 3 of them are master's level teachers, a huge team of wonderful, wonderful direct care staff that work with the boys and supervise them. Even throughout the night, we have 3 on, even at 2 a.m. in the morning, supervising, and there's never less than a 1-to-4 ratio. And our program director has been really terrific as well. And I just want to thank Dr. Chris McRoberts, who's my partner and really, in large part, made Cherry Gulch possible. He's another licensed clinical psychologist and has been a wonderful part of our program.
Well, I'm definitely going to need to have you back again because we're really running out of time and there's just so much more I wanted to ask as well. And I know so much more that you wanted to share. I really want to thank you for, you know, being with us here today. And did you have any last thoughts that you'd like to leave our listeners with, Dr. Sapp?
Well, just so I can stay out of trouble, I better thank my wife as well. She's here in the office, and she keeps me organized, and I couldn't do it without her. So, but thank you so much for having me on the show, and I really appreciate it. I'd love to be back, and you have a great day, and thank you for all those that tuned in.
Thank you. You know, again, I really want to thank you for being here today. Your time's been really appreciated. And yes, please, we do absolutely want to give recognition to your beautiful wife, who I know helps keep things organized. And I really want to thank all of our listeners today. You know, sometimes we learn lessons as a child, sometimes when we are older. I really appreciate the fact that you are out there and that you are listening and that this information is beneficial to you. You can go to LA Talk Radio. radio.com to listen to us live every Monday at 12 noon Pacific Standard Time. You can listen to the shows after they've been archived, and we will have this show up for you by tomorrow. You can visit our website at troubledteenhelp.com or horizonfamilysolutions.com to sign up and receive our newsletter. Have a great week, everyone, and welcome to the rest of your life.
You're listening to Troubled Teen Help with Dori Francis, right here on LA Talk Radio.